So the big question is this: how do entrepreneurs like us, who are running real businesses, spending money from our own pockets, how do we build, grow, and operate our businesses in a way that lets us exit them one day for millions of dollars? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answer. My name is Raleigh Williams, and welcome to the Exit Plan Secrets Podcast.
Boom. Okay, we got Matt. Matt has a huge supplement exit that happened a couple years ago, and now you're doing brand acquisition stuff. So you've been on both sides of the selling side, and now you're on the buying side. Walk us through high level, and then we'll kind of get into the details of the supplement exit that you had before we get into the acquisition stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So high level, got into the supplement game, kind of focused on the fitness and wellness space, and specifically focused on Amazon. We're early adopters to really target the Amazon market, and it turned out really well. I mean, it's a cool story in its own, where in its own right, where we took $600 investment back in 2013 and turned it into roughly $10 million in revenue by the end of annually by the end of 2016. So it just compounded on itself over the first several years. Ended up selling the brand at a pretty healthy multiple in 2017, and it's been kind of a roller coaster up to that, and even since then. And we can get into the nitty-gritty and the details as we go, but high level, man, learned a lot of good, learned a lot of bad, and so now I'm kind of taking that on the
just for context, how big was the exit multiple wise, or like range wise, whatever you're comfortable with?
We can say like mid-teens.
Millions, not mid-teen thousands.
Mid-teen millions. Yes. Yeah. So,
which is crazy. That's amazing. I guess, what was it that made you feel like this was the thing? What were you doing beforehand? And what was like, let's go for this? Or was this just kind of throwing darts in the dark and you felt like you hit a bullseye and you're like, I had no idea? How did you transition into just getting it started?
Yeah. So you're talking about the early days of the company.
The OG days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had a co-founder named Ryan. And so we both went way back. We were doing digital marketing back in our college days, mostly affiliate stuff. And so he and I had worked together for quite a while and just known each other. We've been friends for a long time. We both were in kind of transitionary periods in our businesses. And for me, I'd actually stepped out of online marketing and I had taken a job as a district manager for Aldi, the grocery store. So I was at a point where I was like, this is miserable. I need to get back to the entrepreneurial life. And he was in a rebuilding phase. So as we were just kind of bouncing ideas off the wall and realizing we were both kind of at the same point in our life, wanting to kind of rebuild and start something new, we started just saying, all right, let's figure this out, man. Let's figure out what opportunities are out there. And again, this was, this was early 2013 when we started spitballing this stuff. And this was really before the wave of people focusing on Amazon. And so we pretty quickly identified that we wanted to focus on Amazon. We had a couple friends that were doing well with it, and we saw that, there just seemed like there's just a lot of opportunity. Obviously, it's kind of funny to say now, but Amazon, they were big. We thought they were huge back then. Nothing compared to what they are. Fast forward 8 years later, they were nothing back then to compare to what they are now.
Yeah.
And so luckily we just gambled that their platform was going to continue to grow at an astronomical rate. And I mean, turned out we were right. We even picked a category that, we focused on supplements because we wanted it to be something that could be replenishable. So it wasn't like a one-off sale. We right. wanted customers to be able to come back. And then again, we ended up with like a 40% reorder rate. So, we get a new customer and there's 40% chance they're going to order from us again. So that
made were supplements what you started off with right off the bat, or did you try anything and fail miserably before that?
On this brand, No, we went straight into supplements. Now, obviously, I had some successes and some failures from early in my career, and I had moved over. I'd done a lot of digital digital info products, things like that in my background, as Ryan had as well. And then I had dabbled a little bit in supplements previously. So I had a little bit of knowledge of supplements, but not super in depth. So, with this brand, we decided to just go straight after supplements because, again, we wanted to go physical product. We wanted to step away from the info product world a little bit. We wanted to go, like I said, more replenishable, longer customer value, longer customer chain there. So, yeah. Getting back to, the original question was, I think we hit success pretty quickly. Our very first product, like I said, it was $600. We bought, for $6, we bought 100 units basically of our first product. And we very quickly became the number, I think it was probably within a month, we became the best seller. And, I think we did like 25 sales a day, the best seller in that category. Fast forward to now, to just kind of contrast that, the bestseller in that category is easily doing 5, 6, maybe even more 100 units a day. Yeah. So that category has just like exploded since then. So again, we were our timing on it was just super lucky. I'm not going to take credit and say I had the foresight. We just, we're very fortunate on our timing that it really blew up. But we knew pretty quickly that we had a success on our hands. Cause like I said, our first product was a bestseller in the category. And that was with like 25 reviews and we were doing 25 sales a day. And then I think our first like 7 or 8 products we rolled out were bestsellers in their categories. So it was just kind of, we kind of hit home run after home run right out of the gates. And that just allowed our growth to just explode pretty astronomically. I mean, and again, I know in today's numbers, these don't sound as exciting, but for back in the day, these were significant. So our first full calendar year, we did $2 million in revenue. Our second calendar year, we doubled that to about $4 million in revenue. And then our third calendar year was the one where we hit around ballpark of $10 million. And that's the year that we sold based on those numbers.
I've seen it before, like when you have such a home run success right off the bat, were you in your head a little bit like, oh, this is too easy, like this is all going to come crashing down, like this is like completely unsustainable, there's no way we should be making this much, like I've seen like such early success and you almost like put the brakes on because like you can't believe that it's happening?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, so I'll say that like I'm in general, I've always been a little bit more pessimistic, and then my business partner Ryan, my co-founder, he's like always an optimist. So he was like, actually, I remember back in our very early days when we started seeing a little bit of success, I was like, man, if I could make, $100,000 a year from this and $100,000 a year from my day job, I'm set, man. I'm happy. Ryan's like, bro, 100, like, why do you think it's so small? We're going to be doing 100,000 a month. And I remember being like, no, we won't. That'll never happen, but okay, we'll try. And I always had more of the mindset of like, man, this just seems too easy. Something's not right here. Ryan was the opposite though. He was like, no, this is, this is going to keep skyrocketing. We can, he had more faith. And that's why we made such a good team, is because we were very much on opposite ends of the spectrum and we met in the middle. And so absolutely, man, I went through a lot of what you're saying where it was like,
And I mean, in supplements, you kind of have to decide, right? Because like, you have to keep reordering, and you have to, if you're in growth mode, you got to keep a lot of money in the pot to the growth. And so you can, like, that's a big business decision that has a lot of implications of, do we want to suck this dry and just kind of slow roll orders, or do we make nothing as owners and like keep the business growth? So I mean, sounds easy, but it's like it has big implications in terms of the way that a physical product brand is getting run,
Oh yeah, absolutely. And this was new for us too, and that was an interesting lesson to learn, because Ryan and I prior to this had mostly done info products, which it's mostly info products. You invest time, a little bit of upfront cost, and then it's pure profit. There's no inventory to track, nothing like that. So exactly like you're saying, I mean, even that first, we started with $600 and we just rolled that over. I mean, we didn't take a penny out of the business for 12 months. And then we only started taking money out because it was like our accountant was saying, basically, you know, we had to pay ourselves a reasonable wage or something like that. Right. So we each just drew a small salary. So ultimately that was a big decision in wanting to sell too. Cause what, like, just like you're saying, when you're seeing any physical product, not just supplements, but any physical product brand, when you're seeing that astronomical growth, it's like, yeah, you know, I might've placed this order and I doubled my money on that inventory, but now I need to go place a double order. So all of that money is going back to inventory. So, and on paper, it's like, oh man, we made, you know, whatever, let's say we made $100,000 profit on that order. Well, that's cool, but now I've got to go place a $200,000 PO. So all that money is going back in. But at the same time, you got to pay taxes on that sale. So like there was right. a lot to learn. Where, because I remember that our first couple of years, even whenever we, you know, our accountant did our tax bill, I'm like, dude, we didn't make that much. I'm like, here's my bank account. Where are you seeing this? And that's where he's like, man, physical products, you know? And so he had to like educate me. It was just my own ignorance. But so like we'd have to take so much cash out of the business just to pay the taxes.
Right.
And so a big reason we sold was exactly what you're saying. I mean, honestly, if it had gone belly up before we sold, us personally, we wouldn't, you know, on paper, it was like, oh yeah, we're worth so much money and our business is worth so much money, but we didn't have that much cash to show for it. You know, so that was a big reason for selling too. It was like, hey, we're working hard. We're busting our butts. We've on paper got this huge value. Let's finally kind of, take some chips off the table.
Were you guys on the same page when you guys started talking about selling?
Not exactly. I was definitely, again, the pessimist in me. I was more of the, hey, let's sell. Let's get some cash.
You're the Raleigh.
Yeah.
Get
while the getting's good. I mean, obviously Ryan right. being much more the optimist, he's like, dude, we're selling out too early. We're selling ourselves short. And, you know, but in my mind, we had hit the value that, I live a pretty modest lifestyle. You know, I live in the middle of nowhere, Missouri, on like 40 acres, and, you know, like to just kind of hang out with my family and fish and, you know, go clear brush with the chainsaw and the tractor, stuff like that. So, you know, we hit a number that I was like, you know, hey, I can sustain my lifestyle and my family off of this money. I feel like I have to take that opportunity while I can. And then I'll, you know, if I make more down the road, awesome. If I don't, then hey, I check that box, you know? So that was kind of my mindset. Again, obviously Ryan thought we were selling ourselves short, but you know, we ended up selling. And I think in the long run, I mean, he would probably come around and say he would do it all over again.
So what was the decision to go with the broker and how expensive did it end up being?
Yeah, man. So we happened to be able to cut a good deal with our broker. We didn't pay him a full 10%. You know, we worked out some trades of services that, you know, one benefit that comes with having a partner.
Like he wanted to get yoked and
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, one benefit, there were some benefits to having a partner who is very well known in the entrepreneur circle and who can refer a lot of business. So we were able to get a discount on our sales. I mean, we still paid an astronomical amount of money for some people to kind of open up a Rolodex for us. But yeah, typically they charge like 10%.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know investment bankers are cheaper, and I know a lot of sellers are starting to lean towards investment bankers these days.
Especially if you're over 10 mil. If you're in the range, if you're in the mid-teens, an investment bank is like, I think that they're better, like just smarter people usually.
There's just a lot more sophistication to what they do. And I've worked from being on the buying side, I've worked with some investment banks or representing brands and stuff. And it's a completely different experience.
Right.
You know, when we did it, we really represented ourselves still. And, you know, with the other, I've worked with investment bankers, they're almost like, hey, don't talk to the brand owners, talk to us. If you, you know, we can set up some calls, but every question flows through us. We will handle all the questions. If we have to refer to them, we will. So honestly, it just makes it an easier process for brand owners.
And a banker will recast your financials and like aggregate all of the data and like present a much prettier picture. My experience has been a broker is just like, they don't do that, right? Like,
oh yeah.
They're just kind of like, whatever your financials, like y'all talk, like I made the intro, just as long as everybody signed that I'm getting paid, like y'all do whatever from here on out, you know?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And yeah, you know, so, and again, when you're as a brand owner, when you're going through this process, man, it's really hard. And it's, you know, you're also trying to run your business, but like this whole process of, you know, courting potential buyers and prepping your business for sale. And then the due diligence process was probably the most like unpleasant business process I've ever been through. Yeah. And when you're doing it on your own and for the first time, it's hard, man. I mean, it sucks.
If you're in the middle of a brand right now, right, and you have 50% growth and you're thinking about selling, what would you tell somebody that's in that position that's like running a business with partners? Like what are the big rocks in the harbor to watch out for? And like how would you re-navigate that process now?
Yeah. So knowing what I know now, I wouldn't change anything because I love where I'm at right now, but let's say I could go back and alter things without anything going negative. Right. Some of the changes that I could see that could be positive for us, you know, obviously the size of our deal, I don't know that I would have used a broker. You know, I probably would have, you know, either, and again, this was pre-aggregators. Now, like, again, I think there's a lot more options out there for brand owners that can even make it even better. But you know, us, we probably would have talked to an investment bank about some representation. And then, you know, we would have thought more about the partner as well, just because, you know, we rolled over a lot of equity. And
what does that mean? Explain what a rollover is.
Yeah, okay. So rollover is like, you know, sometimes a buyer will come in and they'll buy 100% of your company and then you exit completely.
Cash, and now you get cash at the table, they buy 100% and that deal's done. And you're gone. Taking $10 million to the bank.
Exactly. But what a lot of buyers like to do is, because the secret sauce a lot of times is the entrepreneur, right? I mean, yeah, you figured out a great idea, you built a great brand, but a lot of times it's the people that really are the secret sauce. So most buyers will want involvement from the brand owner moving forward. So the way most deals are structured, and this is how ours was structured, was they didn't buy 100% of our company. They bought 75% of the company. And then Ryan and I each rolled over, you know, whatever, we split the remaining. We kept that equity in the business. So they effectively bought their way in as partners instead of buying us out, if that makes
sense. Was there a discussion about seller financing versus rolling over equity? Like, you know, because a lot of times it's, we'll pay you seven. So on a $10 million deal, we'll pay you 7.5 mil. And the last 2.5, we'll do adjustments over time, assuming that EBITDA and that piece kind of ends up the same. But you can also do a seller financing where you take a debt position, which gives you less of the upside of the business, but a safer position because you're getting paid monthly through debt that you're keeping on the business versus rolling over. Was that discussed at all, or it was just
no? Yeah, it really wasn't. And we were lucky that we honestly had several offers, so we kind of got to be picky with the offer, you know, and pick the one that was structured the best. And honestly, ours was structured great for us. I mean, we got the cash they were giving us, they gave it to us up front. There was actually no earnout. There was no seller financing, anything like that. I do know, I've seen several of my friends have done either earnouts or seller financing. And then because, you know, for one reason or another, maybe they picked a bad partner, something went wrong, they never end up making a dime. And even on our example, on our business, had we done seller financing or had we done an earnout, we never would have seen more money. We would, right, whatever we got at the time of close would have been it. So luckily we got all of our money at the time of close, which is honestly pretty rare.
And you staying in, did you maintain any responsibilities, or did they just want you to stay in to have access to you for, you know, like one-off stuff?
Yeah. So I gave up a lot of responsibility, you know, unfortunately, honestly, because of the way it turned out. But they brought in a new executive team. You know, like even technically my title got dropped down to VP. Which was cool because, you know, part of the reason I sold was I had a young family and I was honestly working way too much. And I wanted less responsibility because I wanted to start focusing on my family. And so that part was cool. But the downside was you know, and again, nothing wrong with the people. I honestly love the people they brought in, but they brought in a new CEO and they brought in just a whole new executive team that tried to take the company in a different direction. And ultimately I was a minority owner. I was, you know, I was a VP. So, you know, and I had a board seat, but I had one seat on a 5-person board. So in every way I was outvoted on a lot of stuff.
What was the, what did the playbook look like? Was it, let's be less Amazon dependent. Let's go all in on Amazon. Screw Amazon. We want to be a more 360 brand. What was like the ultimate?
Yeah. So, so what our success had ventured off of Amazon, right? Like we were an Amazon brand and we were able to parlay that into actually during the due diligence process, after we'd already signed a deal with these guys, but right a couple months before we sold, we actually, you know, leveraged our Amazon success to jump into retail. And we rolled out nationally in over 1,000 stores, retail. So, but we were always an Amazon and digital first company.
Sorry. That retail, did that happen before the buyout?
It happened after we signed, after we went under contract, but before we closed the deal. So, and the reason I specify that is because it didn't, we probably would have gotten more money had it happened before we signed the deal. Because obviously that changes from more of a one-dimensional business to a two-dimensional business. And it made us more cash. So yeah, the timing of it, it helped make sure that we closed the deal because it was good news and it was free value for the buyers.
Growth into the
sale. Exactly. It kept our trajectory going, which when you're in due diligence, when you're under that contract, all you care about is, man, you don't want to see a blip in that radar, man. You don't want to see those numbers drop. All you want to see is upward because you just want that deal done. So anyway, that's why I specify on the timing of that. But yeah, so, but their goal was, they were much more old school in their mentality. And they wanted to say, okay, here's this Amazon play. We're going to take them retail. And they tried to even take us into, you know, again, being fitness. We had launched in Vitamin Shoppe and in Vitamin World, both separate deals. And so the next up was GNC. We had been negotiating with GNC for quite a while. And they kind of came in and said, nah, forget those specialties. We're going to go into like drug, you know, go to CVS, Rite Aid and stuff like that, which for a general supplement brand could be really good. And for a beauty brand, like for a lot of brands, that can be a home run. People don't buy their pre-workouts at those places, unfortunately.
Right.
So it was just a pivot in the direction and the emphasis. And because that's where the emphasis went, it meant that the focus on where our bread and butter was slipped.
Yeah.
Well, what was your bread and butter? I know you started with one product. Like how big did your product line become?
At the time that we closed the deal, we were probably around 20 SKUs. You know, so we had, you know, I transitioned to right out of the gates. I mean, everything we hit was home run. But that's when competition was really low. And so I transitioned the business to where like, I just went for base hits. If I could get a base hit, sometimes I'd get a double, sometimes it would turn into a home run, but I rolled out, you know, we had a lot of base hits, but yeah, we were about around 20 SKUs when we sold the brand.
Were you manufacturing it in US?
Most. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Supplements. Yeah. Really to get under certifications and stuff. And that's one of our keys to success actually was the manufacturing. We didn't use cheap products. Our margins were actually worse than pretty much all of our competitors because we made high quality products, you know, that were backed by third party tests and, you know, built on science. So, you know, we really committed to our customers and that's part of our success was we were different than a lot of other brands out there. So just selling some other, you know, private label junk.
Yeah. What would your playbook look like for someone who's got multiple offers in terms of vetting a buyer group now that you've been through it and seen a little bit of the shadow side of what can happen post closing?
Yeah, man, it's hard because everybody tells you what you want to hear. So like we had like the same thing coming from the same story coming from a lot of different people. And then we just had to decide like, okay, which one do we trust the most? Which one do we think we'll make the most money on? And a lot of it was just gut. I mean, you know, one of the deals that we passed on, but was really interesting and we entertained it for a very long time was, this was before anybody had even done a roll up. And these people were planning some sort of a roll up and they were trying to acquire several, us and several brands at the same time. And then they were going to do a roll up and go public. And so, but it had never been done at the time. So like that sounded really exciting because like, dang, we're gonna get paid now. And if they actually do this roll up and we can go public, like that could be huge. That'll trade at a much higher multiple than what we're getting. So, you know, the cliche of getting a second bite of the apple, as everybody says, like that second bite of the apple in that scenario, when, you know, basically when we sell again or go public, would have been really big. But again, everybody gave kind of a similar pitch of how they're going to, you know, they're going to get you paid today, but they're going to bring in the team and they're going to grow it. And you're going to get a, you know, your second bite of the apple is going to be just as big, if not bigger than the first. So it's hard to, I mean, really it's going to come down to gut. I mean, who do you think, and who has a track record too, right? Like, so knowing what I know now, I sold to a private equity group that, again, I really like the guys. I'd still go hang out with them, good relationship with them, but looking back, this was their first time in our industry. This was the first time buying like a digital brand, first time buying the Amazon brand. So everything they told us was true. I mean, their blueprint or their resume of how many brands they had acquired and then sold for more money, that was all true. There's nothing false about that, but they were inexperienced in our industry, which meant, you know, it might have been true over there, but it won't be true. You might not be true over here. So I would focus more on, you know, have they done what they say they're going to do, and have they done it in a business or a brand similar to yours
in the sector, right? Done it in your exact.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah, these guys, I mean, they had done it, man. They had done it with other brands, but they'd done it in brands that were completely different than ours. And they, you know, so then they stepped out of their forte, they stepped into our world, and they were over their heads in a lot of ways. So that's what I would really focus on is, you know, because again, everybody's going to tell you the same thing. I mean, look at their track record. And if it's a first time, and I don't think they're wrong. I mean, you know, I have a friend who sold his company and the first time he sold it, I mean, I don't know what number he got. Let's call it mid-teen millions as well. And they sold to a private equity group. This was their same instance. This was their first time doing a deal like this. He was even in supplements as well. And now I think their enterprise value's in the multiple hundreds of millions. Fast, wow. You know, three years down the road. But it's because what they did, they doubled down and they said, okay, what's your secret? You know, what's lighting the fire under this company. Okay, cool. Let's pour gasoline on that. And they said, you know, we've got deeper pockets. We can, you know, we can build this out. And they just went hard at it. So not to say that, you know, somebody, a newbie, can't step in and do well, but that would be very important to me is have you done this? And more importantly, have you done this in our industry and in our space?
Yeah. Go ahead, Meezy.
I usually avoid hypotheticals, but I know you said you wouldn't change anything. You really enjoyed, you know, like the process and where you're at now. But if they had come in and you'd had, you know, the advantage of their resources and stuff, but you had maintained control, would you have expected a different outcome? Like not getting outvoted on all those things where you know about the industry you're in?
Yes, I will. Yes. I mean, again, who knows ultimately, right? Like any instance, you know, we all know running a digital business, things can change. Amazon can change their algorithm overnight, and they have, and they will continue. But yes, I think a lot of the problems we ran into, we might've still run into them, but I would have pivoted faster because I mean, we always ran into businesses or ran into problems in this business. And we always just figured it out and pivoted. You know, we were much more agile and much more open to change.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
What if you were starting from scratch, a supplement brand, would you be, if you were starting a pre-workout, whatever, let's just say today though, not 2013 Amazon, do you still focus, do you start as an Amazon first brand today like you did back then? You think that playbook is still, or you think the growth rate there is, it's too massive of a thing to continue to grow like y'all enjoyed, and the tidal wave is just, it looks different than it did.
It's completely different. I wouldn't go straight to Amazon these days because the leaders have such a moat built around them that it's going to be hard for you to catch up. And the way Amazon is, I mean, those people, the best sellers can continue to grow at a faster rate. Because just the way the Amazon algorithm works, right? Like let's say you have a product getting 1,000 sales a day. Well, if you get I don't know, just throw out a number, right? I mean, somebody could call me out and say, oh, those ratios don't work, but whatever. Say you're a product with 1,000 reviews a day is getting, what, a 5% review rate would be, what, 50 reviews a day, right? Or sorry, 1,000 sales a day, 5% review rate, 50 reviews. So there, you know, and then let's say you're just starting out and you are getting 10 sales a day with a 5% review rate. That means you're getting a review every other day. So like they're compounding their already bigger number faster than you can compound your small number. And if you go too aggressive, Amazon has checks in place now where you get dinged by the algorithm for being, you know, for your ratios being too out of whack and you being too aggressive. So they make it actually really hard to catch up to the industry leaders. So these days, you know, what we did, again, that's why we were just lucky on our timing. I mean, back when we started, there was no verified and unverified reviews. There were just reviews. ratings didn't exist. I you mean, you know, like,
pay some Fiverr guys, get some reviews out there.
And people did, man. And I'm actually proud to say we never did any fake or fraudulent reviews. I mean, we were hard on that from the first day, but yeah, I mean, people did. And I caught some of our competitors doing it. I caught some of my friends doing it and called them out on it, you know, straight up on Fiverr. And it was completely different, man. It was so easy to just get momentum. And again, Amazon's caught on and they've made it harder. So these days I feel like you need a more holistic approach. You can't just go straight and bully your way on Amazon. I'd say take pre-workout, for example. If I was starting, you know, my business over again in the fitness space, then I would look for influencers. I would try to figure out, okay, can we, whether it's Instagram or YouTube or TikTok, how can I get momentum outside of Amazon and then leverage that to grow Amazon? Because there are brands who have done that and have done really well. I mean, like picture, you know, a company called Alani Nu. They were built on the back of an influencer, and they're doing, I mean, on Amazon alone, they're doing several hundred thousand dollars a month. But I think that's a drop in the bucket compared to what they do on their own, you know, yeah, their own website.
But you wouldn't ignore Amazon as a platform. You would still have a presence there. It just wouldn't be the tip of the spear.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, 3-4 years ago, I'd say, you know, take every penny you have and invest it in growing your Amazon. Now I would say, okay, let's divide this a little bit more equally. Yeah, you still want to go hard at Amazon, but you need the other assets to drive momentum on Amazon, because you've just got to look more organic and you can't go as hard on Amazon as you used to be able to.
How does that look for aggregate? Like what is somebody like Thrasio or Grove? How do you look at a brand? Because historically in normal private equity world, you want to be omni-channel, kind of channel diversified. How does that work with the Thrasios and kind of these aggregators that are so Amazon heavy? What do they do from a valuation perspective? If you have a Shopify store that's driving half of your sales and an Amazon store that's driving half of your sales, that's good because it's omni-channel, or that's you're not focused enough on the only channel that they actually care about and your Shopify store is too hard to grow. So you can keep that. We don't even want it. We just want your Amazon stuff.
Yeah. You know, and I think each one would be different, right? I know in our, like, obviously I can only speak specific to Grove and what we do. But we would have a higher value if somebody had a more of a Shopify presence, because we know we can win on Amazon. You know, we know we can come in, and especially over time, we're going to bite off market share on Amazon. So if somebody has, you know, say they're doing really well on, like you said, on Shopify or really well in retail, to me, that's more valuable or more important piece, because again, we're already good at the Amazon piece. We can do that. We know we can add value there. So, and we can add value on the other pieces, but if you already got an existing Shopify, then, you know, we know we can bring you into where our bread and butter, we're really good at retail and we're really good at Amazon. So we can, you know, kind of make you take you from a one prong or two prong. We can add our prongs to yours. And, So I see more value in being diversified, but specifically being diversified off Amazon.
Got it. And, I want to go back to the sale bounce back. What happened to you kind of personally? I've been through a sale and this thing that you spent so much time on, and you had so many, it's like your child going to college, I guess. And you're like an empty nester and you're like, what am I supposed to do? What did that, What did that, did you have that, or you just, it was, what are the transition post-sale? And I know you kind of stayed involved operationally for some time, but after that operational piece ended, what did that look like for you in terms of like, what am I supposed to do with this? I feel like it's like an athlete retiring at like 27 or something.
Yeah, no, it really was. In a lot of ways it was. Because the same thing, right? I was 29 when I sold. And then I kind of, you know, the drama after the sale kept me busy for quite a while, because I was really just fighting fires and trying, you know, I still had a passion for, it was like you say, Mike, it was like my baby, and I felt like it was headed in the wrong direction. You know, if I wanted my baby to go to college, it was saying, nah, I'm going to drop out and, you know, go travel the world for a year. And I'm like, nah, wait, you know, let's figure this out. So, you know, after we got past that, when I finally kind of took the leap to say, okay, I'm just stepping away from this thing. You know, I gave it my shot. You guys do what you want with it. I kind of semi-retired for a while. And fortunately, you know, that's, you know, my wife and I had another, we had our second kid at that point. So it allowed me, I really just kind of stepped back and enjoyed life. It allowed me to be a lot more present for my daughter, than I was for my son for his first 2 years of his life. So, you know, I felt actually more fulfilled because I was able to focus on the other aspects of my life that are honestly more fulfilling. But I have seen friends, and even when I was, before I sold, I had friends that would tell me like, oh man, you're going to feel empty after you sell, you know, it's going to feel like there's a hole in you and you're not going to be able to wait to start something over again. It really wasn't that way for me though. Cause like you said, I filled that hole with other stuff, and, you know, and I, by the time we finished all the drama of it and I had lost so much value in the rollover equity, I was pretty burnt out anyway.
Be done.
Yeah.
And so what's the next thing? What are you doing now?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, I've stayed busy, kind of keep, you know, sharpening my skills, made sure they stay up to tune throughout the years. I've been doing consulting and things like that. But this past year, I guess back in 2020, I joined up with some friends of mine, actually longtime friends, that they've started a company called Grove. It's Growve. And so they've kind of become an aggregator, right? So obviously Thrasio is the one getting a ton of publicity right now. Grove has been doing a similar thing, just less public. And so they've built this out to where it's about roughly 20 brands doing combined, let's say about 175 or so, just south of $200 million a year in revenue. So they've done a really good job building out, kind of doing this roll up of brands, and they're focused on the health and wellness space in Amazon. So anyway, I stayed in contact with these guys over the years, and we've talked about working together in the past. And last year they came to me and were like, hey, you know, would you be interested in coming over and doing, helping lead some brands, you know, add some veteran guidance, help launch new brands, and help kind of lead acquisitions of, you know, we're hungry, we're acquiring brands left and right. Would you like to be a part of the team? Because of my experience, I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. You know, especially like when I sold Sheer, part of what I wanted was to be a smaller piece of something bigger. Right. And that's the story they pitched us on. Obviously that's not what happened, but that's what Grove has built out. And so they basically gave me an opportunity to be, you know, a smaller cog in a much bigger wheel. So, you know, and they've built a system where I'm a fan of, you know, the phrase saying where, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And so because they have built this out where they've got these different brands, their valuation is much higher. You know, again, their valuation, you know, based off of EBITDA is going to be in the mid-teens or so, somewhere around there.
From a multiple perspective.
Yeah. So like what's cool about it is if I were to go build my own brand again, I would probably be able to sell it for, let's say, anywhere a 3 to 5x. Once I reached over a certain point, maybe I could get a 6-7x. But even, you know, some big brands I know are topping out at like 7. The cool thing about these aggregators are so much more valuable because they're so much more stable and they're acquiring so much revenue that, yeah, they're getting a much higher multiple. So even take like, let's just compare and contrast my deal. Let's say I had done a deal with Grove instead of the deal I did. The day I rolled over, so I rolled over $3 million in equity, which, like we've talked about, is now zero because we lost it completely. I don't think we got to the nitty gritty. The company ended up going into bankruptcy and I lost it. So
I wasn't going to take you to that dark spot.
Yeah. Bro. So the story we've told is the story of how I lost $3 million worth of equity in a business. I fought it tooth and nail to everything, but anyway, on Grove, that wouldn't have happened. So number one, the day we signed the deal, instead of that $3 million, you know, even if I rolled over $3 million, the moment we put pen to paper, my $3 million would have like at least tripled in value. So my $3 million would have been worth $9 million. So on paper, instead of being worth three, I'd have an extra $9 million in my net worth. And then the flip side is they were experts in the industry and in the space. Right. That $9 million never would have gone to zero anyway. That $9 million would have compounded since then. So all that to say, that's what I'm doing now is working with them. And I'm super passionate about it because, you know, I have 3 million reasons why to be passionate about this. And I've seen a lot of my friends, like my story is a dime a dozen. I've seen a lot of people have that exact same story. And honestly, for the past few years, I've been advising a lot of my friends anyway, like as they were reaching the acquisition, I've been helping kind of coach them along the way and, you know, helping them learn from my mistakes. And so this just gives me a way to do it kind of officially as well. So
what's Grove's kind of preferred deal? Do they would they prefer less cash out the door and let a founder kind of roll in to keep the operational apparatus there? Or they, you know, because Thrasio, you don't roll, right? It's just like cash, seller financing, maybe on a little piece for a little changeover while they figure out the operational piece. But Thrasio doesn't want you rolling into their apparatus. And, you know, what's Grove's kind of deal structure that they usually do for an acquisition?
Yeah, so I think the difference, like Thrasio is probably like, you know, here's the book. We followed this steps in this book, you know, right. Like, and you know, with us, we're built by entrepreneurs too. So it's much more flexible. I mean, some of the deals are 100% outright buy, you know, we acquire and after a transition period, the owner disappears. Some of the deals though, it's like, hey, let's do, more of a, I mean, it's honestly viewed more as a partnership. It's like, hey, we want to acquire your brand, but we also want to acquire you and bring you onto the team. And so it really is unique. Each deal is kind of unique in what will be the best deal for like that brand owner and for that brand specifically. Because, you know, I mean, a lot of owners, you know, it kind of, the way I would pose it is like, what do you want? Number one, because we can accommodate either way. And what, like, if you want to be involved, like, what do you want to do? Because that's the other cool thing is we own 3PL, we own some manufacturing, we own, obviously we've got extensive, you know, accounting and finance and admin department, which was like my biggest headache whenever I ran the business. Yeah. If somebody came in and said, hey, I have a whole admin team that will take over. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. You know, we've got a bunch of industry executives or industry veterans on the executive team from the retail world. So it's like, you pick what you want to do, anything you, and we can let you kind of focus on that. We'll take the other stuff off your plate because we've got a team for it. I mean, we've got like 50-ish employees who their sole job is to focus on Amazon. All in the enterprise, I think there's, I don't know, around 300 employees at this point. So we really can cater each deal to be unique to what best fits that brand owner.
Yeah.
Is there a characteristic that you guys like specifically are looking for when acquiring a brand? You know, something that all of your brands currently like have in common, like they're all really good at this or something.
Making profit.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, there's not, because I mean, we span the spectrum. And I think that's part of the approach too, is we want to be well diversified. So like, I don't think we necessarily want to focus on like, oh, we only acquire brands that look like this or brands that sell that. We want to build out the portfolio and, you know, cover the whole spectrum. So we don't necessarily have something that we like look for specifically in a brand. If it's a strong brand, if it has, you know, good numbers, or even like a lot of them we've looked at, maybe they're not even to the optimization phase, right? Because if they're still in that scaling phase where, they're rolling all their money over and they're not that profitable yet. Like we still want to talk to those brands. Like a lot of sellers are like, oh, I'm not ready to sell yet because I'm not going to get the money I want out of it. But we're like, no, we get it. We know where you're at. We can still make it right for you. And we can help you with that burden of scaling and stuff. So man, it's all over the board on what we look at and what we do. But if at the end of the day, fundamentally, if it's a good business, that's just what we're looking for.
And so what's the size? What's the size, either revenue, profitability, growth rate? Yeah. Like if I have this, then I should definitely check out Grove. If I'm under this, right?
We'd like it to be at least like $1 million in revenue. We want to go after like bigger brands, honestly, are really the focus, but, that's kind of our minimum, where if it's under $1 million in revenue annually, and that's top line revenue, not talking EBITDA. So if it's under $1 million in revenue, we're not as interested in it. If it's a unique brand, I still want to look at it. Right. Especially if it's something where we can have a value add. I mean, if it's a brand that's doing like, let's just say it's doing $1 million, like usually on Shopify and they're not on Amazon, like, okay, cool. We could probably make that $2 million pretty easy. So, you know, we still want to talk to you because there's value add there. But yeah, so that's kind of it. And on the top end, I mean, there really is no top end of what that's part of the good thing about the size that we are. I mean, we have access to so much capital. So we really can go after some really large brands. And we have a few right now that we're looking at that are very significant in size.
That's awesome. Yeah. Where's the best spot? So if I have a brand, where do I reach out? How do I find you? How do I get in contact? What should I check out? Where do I go to get my check?
Yeah, to get your check. So, I mean, the best way, honestly, is just shoot me an email. It's mdavis@grove.com. And it's GROWVE.com.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So that's really the best way. I mean, you can check out our website. It's not as flashy as a lot of the actors. Like I said, we fly under the radar in a lot of ways right now. We're not, you know, every time Thrasio does something, they put out a press release about it, which is good for them. It's getting a ton of publicity, but we're a little bit more under the radar. So we're a little bit more personal. Just, you know, shoot me an email and we can talk about it. But even brands, like I said, that aren't necessarily, you know, even if you're under $1 million, I still would love to talk. Cause at the very least, man, I've been through this. I love to give advice and help people out, man. Cause I've been extremely fortunate. If I can offer any wisdom to brands, I would love to. So even if somebody isn't quite ready yet, let's make an introduction, even if we part ways, or maybe we'll touch back up later, but maybe I can also offer some wisdom along the way.
It's awesome. Yeah. I got to get started on my supplement brand and then I'm going to reach out and we're going to do it. I mean, we'll talk offline. We'll get this all figured out.
Yeah, man.
But grove.com. Okay. Thanks, dude. I appreciate the time, man. That was awesome.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.